Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to HealthyLife.net's Visionary Celebrity Series, a place where you get to call in and talk live to a world-renowned expert. Today's show is Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, a world-renowned expert on mind, body medicine, and patient empowerment. So let's welcome Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Hello, everybody. Welcome, Dr. Bernie Siegel. I like talking to myself. If I don't take my medicine, a lot of things happen. But, and I'm just kidding. My medicine, yeah, well, though right now I have pills for my heart because you talk about life. My wife died about 6 years ago, and when I found her dead in the morning when I went to wake her up, she died in her sleep. I got a pain in my chest, I swear. It felt like somebody stuck a knife into me. And after that, I had my troubles. I've talked to them on the show. And I still wear, at 6 years, over 6 years, but I wear the wristband that Yale Haven Hospital puts on you every time you go for a visit anywhere, because all the numbers fit my wife's birth date and things in our relationship. And I won't go, you know, ramble on about this, but let me just give you an example. My wife's patient number, she was born on 9-9. Her number is 389-3966. What does that mean? Two nines, two threes, two sixes, everything adds up to nine, and eight is a number that symbolizes new beginnings. So when I got to the hospital that day after my chest pain, I knew my wife was watching out for me. Because, again, I know I've said this, but I like saying it over and over again. As soon as I walked in, they said, put him in room 9. And then the hospital room, they had to wait a day for me. They said it was 819. And I knew I'll be fine. There's no problem. My wife's here taking care of everything. So she's still with me. And the thing that I wanted to chat about today was I'm 91 now. I got to get that across to all of you. And I've noticed really how much like being a child it is. And I don't mean because of behavior, but questions, what you think about. You know, you're a child. What am I going to be? What's going to happen to me? You're an adult. What am I going to do? What's going to happen to me when you're 91? And what's interesting in my life was I was born to a mother who was told not to have any children because she was very sick at the time. And it was hyperthyroidism. I mean, she was so depleted that they said to her, you add to your stress, it could kill you. Don't get pregnant. Well, she did her mother a favor who wanted a grandchild, and she became pregnant. And she survived, but boy, oh boy, it wasn't easy, and I wasn't in, well, let's say her body was so weak she couldn't deliver me. So they had to pull me out, they told her, and I was a disaster. And, but, you know, it's kind of, I was like an old man as a newborn child. I was a battered kid. And that's where I get to a similarity. What saves the kid? Every psychologist knows it. If you're not loved as a child, you have at least 75% chance of having suffered a major illness by the time you reach your 50s. Whereas if you said, yeah, my parents loved me, 25%. And that was something I had to figure out. How the hell did I survive if really nobody was taking care of me because they didn't know what to do with me. As my mother said, I wasn't a child, I was a purple melon. I was so battered. And I can still feel deformities in my ribs, where they're out of line, and I'm sure that was from all the trouble they finally went through pulling me out of her, because they told her, you're not going to deliver him, you're not strong enough, so we have to go and pull him out, divorce him. And that's why my mother said I was handed a purple melon. I mean, I had hemorrhage and swelling and everything. But see, what saves everybody, whether you're an adult or a child, as a kid, I had a grandmother. She poured oil all over me, and this is a quote from my grandmother when I said, how the hell did I survive? See, nobody told me about my birth history when I was a kid. And as I got older and got interested in medicine and things and was looking through family papers, I came across all this stuff that they hadn't thrown out from the hospital about me. And I finally said to them, how the hell did I survive? And that's when I heard the story. My mother said, oh, my mother took you, poured oil all over you, and pushed everything back where it belonged 4 and 5 times a day. So as a kid, what did I think? Oh, somebody loves me. I'm getting massaged and loved and hugged, you know, every few hours. And because I also did notice there were no photographs. I think the first one I saw, I was 7 months of age, in the family album. So I realized my grandmother saved my life. And even more, what emphasized that was getting a massage for the first time from a woman when I was in my 40s, because the massage therapist said to my wife and I, I'm so busy, I can't do both of you. I said, all right, do my wife, we like you. Strong, coarse hands. But when I had a woman massaging me, and at that time I had shaved my head, I went into a trance. It was, I'm a baby, grandma's been shaving me. I mean, massaging me, not me shaving me. And it was incredible. I could feel myself go back to being an infant, because of those hands on my body. And believe me, when I opened my eyes, everybody who was in the room thought I'd had a stroke or a heart attack, or because they said, you were gone. We didn't know what happened to you. You didn't talk. You didn't answer us. I said, yeah, I became an infant again. And, boy, they were interested in that story, too. But anyway, folks, you know, that's why I'm saying, it's interesting being a child, but you need the love. And then what happens when you get to be a senior and you're 91, and I'm in damn good shape for a 91. Yeah, my heart is still having crazy beats because of what, you know, happened to me when my wife died. And but still, I'm here. My brain is working. Hey, I'm on a program. I'm talking. People are listening. And I'd say do the same thing with adults, with your relatives, with your loved ones. Love them. And I saw with my parents, in-laws, friends, that when I spent time with them and loving them, when they were ready to die, they didn't have trouble dying. And I don't mean that in a negative way. You know, when they got tired of their bodies, and as my father said, I'm going to have a party Friday afternoon. Tell anybody who wants to come. I'm dying Friday afternoon. We'll have a party first. And my angel George did. He made it into a laughing party because when I said to him, do you know how my parents met? He asked me, did I know how my parents met? I said, no. He said, then ask your mother when you get to the hospital. And the answer was, your father was with other boys walking down the beach. They tossed coins. Your father lost and got me. She was with a bunch of girls she didn't know on the beach who had a terrible reputation. Everybody in the room, including my father, burst out laughing, remembering that. And he died laughing. He looked so healthy, I thought he was going to say to me, I changed my mind. This is fun. I'm not going to die today. Let's try again next Friday. But when one of our, well, my only daughter, but one of his grandchildren walked in, and I announced her, Carolyn's here, he said hello to her, closed his eyes and died. And I'm serious when I say this to you. I'm not trying to upset you. I think about it too. Sometimes when I get in bed at night and it's peaceful and quiet, do I want to die now? Do I want to do interesting things? Because I don't have the energy to write books anymore. I mean, it doesn't mean I don't have things I'd love to write. But even people who say, oh, we'll help you. You can record it, and then we'll go. But it's the energy to talk for hours, to record things, to come up with all these ideas and, you know, put them together, which I did do years ago. But now I don't have that energy. That's the best way I can put it. So you're not going to sit me down in front of a tape recorder to talk for several hours and then you type it up. I just don't get to do it, even though there's all this modern technology that can type from the recorder. It's amazing what I hear can be done. But the energy isn't there for me to keep going, keep going, keep going. Yeah, you see, here I am talking for an hour. Well, but that's just an hour talking to you. You know, I'm not having to do something or make it a good book or whatever. And the other is, I can tell you, besides having loving parents. Well, let me tell you the three messages. I know I've said it before, but I got to keep repeating. When I would say to my mother, I had a terrible day, she'd always say, God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. That used to drive me crazy until I realized how often she was right. And things would happen because of the other event. And when something good would happen, which I was really happy about and came home to tell everybody, it was, again, you know, that just do what makes you happy. Keep it up. You know, because whenever you had to decide something, my mother would say, do what makes you happy. I'd say, Ma, I could use some help making a decision. Do what makes you happy. And so I knew it was a waste of time coming home and saying, what should I do next? Do what makes you happy. that I can't say that always makes you happy when it's the same thing repeated over and over again. And then if you can find a loving grandmother, no matter what age you are, you know, it can be a grandmother. It doesn't have to be your real grandmother of your family, but a male or a female who can be a grandmother in the way they act. And I was going to bring up, because they can too, animals can be grand. The cardiologist out in Australia that I got to know was telling me how, you know, what an area he had to practice in. So he said, I just get in my car and drive all day long from one house to another, because to try to get people to come to my office is hopeless. They're coming from all over the place. So it made him notice something. He said, after doing that for a while, I realized something. Whenever I'd come up to a house and I'd know there was a dog inside barking, or I could see it through a window, that the patient was going to be alive and okay. And if I didn't see a dog, the odds were the other way, that they were not alive. And had died since my last visit. And I can see that, you know. And when I say I can see that, I mean, our house is a zoo. So it changes your chemistry to have all these pets. Somebody's loving you, sitting with you, soft and warm. And tests have been done. It changes your body chemistry to have those creatures with you. And I have two cats now, Princess and Hope. All the other creatures, dozens of them, have died off. But Hope and Princess, just, I know they're taking care of me. Absolutely. Oh, yeah, this morning I had a snack brought to my... me for breakfast, a dead chipmunk. And I'm serious when I say that. I've told this story before on the show, I know. When my wife died, the morning after she died, I woke up and there were six cats in the bedroom, which had never happened, all in the line. And I thought, they know she died, so they're obviously going to do something for me. So I followed them, and they walked me to the kitchen. And what's lying there at the kitchen door? This was a big chipmunk, a real breakfast. And I knew, they're saying, hey, don't worry. We know your wife died. We'll take care of a meal for you. We'll make breakfast every morning. Don't worry. I explained to them I didn't eat chipmunks, so they didn't keep bringing the chipmunks. Because that broke my heart that they killed the chipmunk to make breakfast for me. But I knew this morning it was like a little gift from me to cheer me up. Cause, yeah, I'm going back to see my cardiologist, in a week and a half. Or is it next week? I better look at my calendar. I think it's next week I go. But, and I'm sure that they are doing that to keep me healthy and get there on time and do everything right. So, but it breaks my heart when I see a dead animal that they want me to eat, because I care so much about the animals and try to feed them and take care of them. That's why, though we live in a wooded area with lots of free land around, I fenced in, our house is shaped like a C, so I fenced in the front part, open part, so no wild animals come in and ours can't go out and hurt them. And it works out very well. We have family and friends in and out. And it's amazing, as I say, how the creatures know what's going on inside of you and what you need. So get yourself a pet. And it doesn't matter what kind. Even turtles work. I mean it. We've had snakes, reptiles. Yeah, one raccoon got to be known as, what was it again? Beggar. Because he... knew my wife sat on the front, like porch, and fed all these wild creatures. And they all knew her and would come up to the porch and eat from her hands, eat from what she put on the floor. One of them, though, every night would come to the screen. If the light wasn't on, the door wasn't open, you know, it's like he's saying, where the hell is she? And he would stand up and strip the screen from the slider door, you know, window was behind it, and the screen was covering it, because my wife would usually open the slider, step out, and close the screen so animals didn't go in the house. But this one became known as Beggar, because if she wasn't there, his way of begging for a meal was to shred the screen and tap on the window. And yes, I have photographs of him standing there. But you know what's also interesting? What gives you power? A big, raccoon or a little smelly skunk? And I can tell you, you want to have power over people, smell like a skunk. At least threaten them with that. Because whenever a skunk showed up on the porch, goodbye, everybody. And sometimes it sprayed, and sometimes it snuck in the house and sprayed. And we learned to live with it and keep washing things and cleaning things. But also, I have to say, some of the skunks, not raccoons, some of the skunks became so tame and so friendly that my wife didn't worry about it. You know, they'd come over to her and get a treat and be petted. And they never sprayed her because they knew if they wanted something, they just had to ask. Stand up, put your paws out, and she'd get it, something for them. And we were known as crazy by the local police and the veterinarian and everybody else, because a lot of times I was calling them about animals that were loose or issues, or, you know, with creatures, and telling them to keep an eye out and other neighbors to keep watching to see if something shows up and how that animal is. And I used to be afraid to come to police or what. You know, I'd escape from our house, but they realized you weren't normal, so they let me get away with it. And, you know, I told you about entering the cat and the dog show, because this cat named Miracle. See, that there's something else interesting. Excuse me. I got to interrupt myself. One of the patients I knew, a woman, said she had a dream last night. A cat named Miracle showed up in the dream, told her, this is how you treat your cancer, and you'll recover. Because she had been told by her doctor there really wasn't any treatment that offered her a cure. And this cat appears in a dream, says, my name is Miracle, this is what you tell your doctor to give you and to do to take care of you. And she recovered. And so when our son came home with this wildcat, brought it in the house because he felt sorry it was wandering around. He found it in the garage when he went to get gas there. And I said, all right, we'll call her Miracle. And she really became a miracle. You could talk to her like a person, take her for walks without a leash around the neighborhood. When I took the dogs out, I took her out. She just accompanied us. And people began to realize you don't have to worry about her. They let her in, in the house. Even the police didn't bother with complaints about Miracle. I just took her everywhere. And as I said, entered her in the dog show that drove the vet crazy because she was such a big hit. And in case there are people here who don't know it, when the show was over, the vet said to me, don't do this again. You know, your cat stole the show away from all these dogs. The next year, he put up a sign, because even he developed a sense of humor. It's a big sign for dog show, but there was a sentence across the bottom that said, for dogs only. And I knew he had made friends with me. Getting me to laugh and everybody else, the dogs only. So I didn't take her again and upset him and the show. But she really, why she's called Miracle, she's the most intelligent creature I've ever had. You could go anywhere with her and she never misbehaved. And when I say anywhere, she was in hospitals with me, patients' homes, everything. And everybody knew, after a while, that's a miracle. And she would just behave and make people feel better. So get yourself a miracle. Yeah. Go ahead. Because I keep thinking all these crazy things that have happened. I'm trying to remember now. But there was some animal in the house. I can't remember what kind it was, but we brought in to eat something. We were at our vacation house, and we brought the cat in, gave it something to eat, and then I said to the wife, we have to go to sleep. You got to get rid of that creature. She put it on her shoulder, walked out, and said, okay, I got rid of it. I said, look at your other shoulder. And it had come back in the house, and it was hysterical because you know, the cat wanted to sit on my wife's shoulder and have things to eat, not be put outside. But finally we were able to get her to get off the shoulder and put some food out for her and shut everything and we could go to sleep. Because she, this is a totally strange wild cat. When we lay down, she got into bed with us. And I didn't feel comfortable sleeping with a stranger. But once we put some more food out, then we had a quiet evening. And because my wife didn't realize she had come back in the house. She said, okay, honey, I brushed it off. We can go to bed now. I said, look at your other shoulder. And there sat the cat. So we behaved. But again, you know, to get back to aging, I'm 91. And listen to me talking away and laughing and feeling good. And most of the stories are about animals, not your wonderful family. We had 5 kids because I kept pestering my wife that I wanted a daughter. And finally she, the fourth pregnancy, she developed twins. And thank God one was a girl. Because my wife said, if it's 2 more boys, I'm not coming old enough, and she wasn't kidding. And fortunately, the girl came out first, and even the obstetricians what a gentleman, he let his sister out first. So we all got to get home, it was just an interesting experience. So keep living the experience. You never know what's going to happen. A curse becomes a blessing. Yeah, one of the people that taught me so much was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Because as I began to run a group for cancer patients, see, doctors don't treat people, they treat diseases. And I'm not making that up. I'm saying that from studies I've done and others have done. When you question doctors about practicing medicine, a drawing, you know, or writing about it, people are not discussed or put in or talked about. And that blew my mind because I cared about people. That's why I became a doctor. I'll get back and tell you why. It was really the lessons my parents put into me. Okay. So we'll talk again in a minute.
The Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth. and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
Love Magic and Mud Pies is a brand new book by Bernie Siegel, MD. It helps you raise your kids to feel loved, be kind, and make a difference. Bernie, a husband of over 50 years, father of five children, and grandparent of eight, shares the gems of wisdom he has gathered from his practice and his own family life. Using his caring, comforting, down-to-earth style, Bernie's book answers parenting questions and gives you a wealth of quotes, anecdotes, and parenting tips, delivered with just the right dose of compassion, inspiration, and gentle humor. Love Magic and Mud Pies, an insightful, supportive, must-have guide on every aspect of parenting. Love Magic and Mud Pies by Bernie Siegel, MD, is available on Amazon.com and find bookstores everywhere. Order it today. And don't forget to hear Bernie Siegel's show, Mind Health Matters, right here on HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Welcome back, everybody. Yeah, every body and every mind, welcome back. One of the things we're talking about at the break is my angel, because that was one thing Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I had mentioned her, really made me aware of. I've known I said this before, but she asked me at a funeral I spoke at, which was a Christian funeral, Bernie, are you Jewish? I said, why are you asking? There's a rabbi standing next to you. And I said, oh, that's my angel, George. He just comes with me everywhere and helps me speak. And I stopped worrying about preparing lectures. You could call it a trance state, whatever you want. But if you ever have to give a talk, take a private place, sit down, and make an outline of what you'd like to say. And you'll be amazed how it can come floating out of you, all these wonderful thoughts. And you don't need an outline. When you get up to say, it just comes right back out of you again. And I have had people come up to me after my lectures and say, there's a man standing next to you. I drew his picture for you. And that's in the beginning, when I didn't know what the hell was going on, because I'd bring three or four pages of an outline, and because I wasn't a public speaker or a writer. I'm an artist, literally, I mean, in terms of a painter, so I'm not great with words. I'm good with images. And people would come up and tell me that there was somebody standing next to me while I spoke. And it was somebody I met in a meditation when I went to a workshop, and I thought that was crazy too. You'll meet somebody coming down the path towards you, an inner guide, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh, I didn't come here for this nonsense. And then a man shows up and says, hey, my name is George. And, wow. So, quiet your mind. See, as an artist, that happens frequently, because, you know, I'll see somebody say, oh, I'd love to paint that portrait, or I'd love to paint that flower, or whatever, and you go into a trance, and you paint them. It amazes me how the portraits I've painted look like the people, you know, that you can get it so exact, and I've done a lot of them, because my wife gave birth to five kids, and then we have a bunch of grandchildren from the five children when they got married, and I painted a portrait of every one of them, something that I felt when I painted them. Like one of the kids, their oldest son, has three sons, and I thought, oh, the three musketeers. So I painted them as three musketeers walking together. I painted our one daughter in front of a giant elephant, because I really felt she had the power to control it, and She may be a girl, but she had the power. So each of them, and her twin brother is sitting with a lion that he's got his arms around him and hugging him, because he's not afraid of things either, and loves pets and other things. Yeah. So, I mean it. Go ahead and start drawing pictures. You'll see more in the world when you open up your eyes and think about it as something you could paint a picture of. And even if you don't paint it, think about it that way. And you'll be amazed. Because it's in your genes. I mean, I didn't know I was an artist, but I can remember as a kid just sitting with pads and making pictures with a pencil and a pen, and scribbling things. And even as we grew up, my wife telling me, "You never introduced me to anybody." I said, "I don't remember names. I remember people's appearances, so they come over to me and say hello. And I don't know how to introduce them to you." So she started introducing herself to everybody who came over and said, her introduction was, "Hi, I'm Bernie's wife." And that would open up the conversation, and they would say who they were to her, and then I'd know who they were too. So I didn't get embarrassed. But it's just a way. Yeah, my wife was words. She was a comedian, and I mean that. She stood up on the stage and told jokes for 20 minutes, half an hour, and people roared and loved her and what she had to tell them, because you feel good when you laugh. And I was talking about, difficulties and diseases, like I started with you. Said, "I'm 91 years old. What the hell am I supposed to do?" When I'm talking to you and forgetting that, I'm not 91. I've enjoyed talking to you. You know, I could be 21. I know I'm not, because I've had more experiences. But believe me, I don't spend a hell of a lot of time thinking how old I am and what's going to happen to me. Yeah. Yeah, I know it's true. I mean it. I can accept the end of my life. Because the last couple of weeks, I think my heart went a little crazy again. Slowed down rate. And I've been feeling very tired and lethargic. And I called the cardiologist to say, "Can I come to you, ahead of the scheduled appointment, because I'm not feeling right." And then I took a rest, woke up, and felt great again. And I'm sure my heart just picked up again, whatever triggered that. And like I'm talking to you with plenty of energy. I didn't get tired. And, we've been talking how long? Yeah, over half an hour, almost 40 minutes. And I didn't lose my energy, and I don't feel like stopping or anything else. So pay attention to your body, to your energy, what nourishes you, what feeds you. Because when you do those things, as I say, it's like feeding, filling the furnace, filling the gas tank, and then you can keep going. When it's something you love, when you're helping somebody and it feels good in you, you'll have enough energy to do anything. I didn't stand in the operating room and complain, "Oh, this operation is taking too long." No. I never noticed the time. It was helping people, not how long you're standing there. It's what they needed done. Yeah. So when things went wrong, yeah. Boy, is that a horrible feeling. It's like you're interfering in creation when somebody dies during surgery or afterwards due to complications. And I'm not talking about malpractice. I'm just talking about the risk of surgery, of lots of things. There are side effects to pills, too. All these drug manufacturers telling you how wonderful everything is and you'll feel great, and then you can take a pill and have a reaction and die. Yeah, and I've seen those things at the hospital. And so think about what you're doing, what feels right for you. And you know I do a lot of work with drawing, so the doctor tells you, wants you to take a new pill, think of what color. Don't ask him what color the pill is. Ask him what the medication is, what it does. And then think about what color you give it. Say, is it a healthy color? If you drew it in black, I'd say, that doesn't sound right for you. Red is an emotional color. So it could range from, you know, healthy passion to trouble and side effects and difficulties. And it usually is that with red. Purple, you could be going to die of it. That's a spiritual color. It's a red and a blue. The emotional, and I always say the celestial, taking you to heaven, back to God. So think about it. And if you ever want to help yourself decide what should I do, or have Bernie Siegel help you, you can sometimes email me the picture, and I'll tell you how I feel about it. It could be you in the operating room. You've taken a pill for your heart or blood pressure, diabetes, whatever. And how are you going to get along with it? And believe me, your body is very powerful when it makes a decision about something. That intuitive wisdom says, is this good for me? Should I? And if you get a no from your inner wisdom, I'd say, then tell your doctor you don't want to use that. Could try to figure out something else for you. And do what makes you happy.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, MD. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors. And their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now it even gets better than that. Because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com.
A Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What can you learn from exceptional patients? Plenty. No matter what disease you are dealing with, Dr. Bernie Siegel's book, Peace, Love, and Healing, can help you identify the hidden factors that may be stopping you from getting well. What are the hidden factors? Are you ready? Guilt and blame. Find out how guilt and blame is related to your lifestyle and illness. In Peace, Love, and Healing, Bernie, as he likes to be called, will tell you what steps you can take to heal a life and cure a disease. Peace, Love, and Healing. Get it today at fine bookstores or at Bernie's website, ecap-online.org.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hello, everybody. I just had a nice minute with our helper, announcer, technician. I don't know what his real label he likes to have, but Jay is his name. And some of the things he was saying about how he made decisions in his life. We all need to pay attention. As I said, the three I got from my parents, I got a decision to make. What should I do? See, they didn't say to me, go to this college, take that job, marry that girl. It was do what makes you happy. And that was a problem. Because at the ages I was often asking them, you know, in college and other, how do I know what makes me happy? I mean, I didn't know what being happy was, you know, when you made a decision, what it would lead you to. But I began to pay attention. And don't forget, pay attention to your feelings. Let your body make up your mind. Not what you think. Because if you start, what will make me more money? What will people think of me if, you know, I have a better reputation, if I'm famous, if I'm this, if I'm that? The point is you. What makes you happy? I was amazed at how many famous people are not happy because of what they're doing. They're not having a good time. They're working. So do what makes you happy. And, you know, then you can't be in the wrong place at the wrong time because you're there doing it. And literally, when troubles come up, let them be your teacher, your traffic sign. Let them be the red light that says, stop, take a turn. Think about the path you're on. Is it something you're enjoying, taking you where you want to go? And let me say, keep an open mind, because you don't always know what the right thing for you to do is. I know that may sound crazy, but I'm talking about your intellect, because something can happen, and you meet people who say, oh, boy, the best thing that happened to me, it wasn't what they were looking for, but it happened. So a certain job, marrying somebody, relationships, jobs, all kinds of things that happened. And most of the things in my life that led me even to write a book, become a surgeon, were coincidences, really. 'Cause these are things I never expected to do. But one of my parents' mottos was, we're here to help other people. Now, what you do for them is up to them. What do they need? It's not you, you know, dumping on them because you think this is what you need. No, that doesn't make them happier. You can even give somebody a job and he doesn't like it or she doesn't like it. So what the hell good is it? But when you say, go do what makes you happy, why don't you go ahead? Then they stop worrying about everybody else's opinion, and they follow their heart. Yeah. I forgot who else I knew. It was always, let your heart make up your mind. Let that be the message of this show today. Let your heart make up your mind. And that's more likely to happen to you when you're young or old. Because when you're a kid, you know what you react to positively. And your parents may say, no, we don't want you to become that. We don't want a doctor. We don't want a lawyer. We want a plumber, somebody to take over the family business. And it's not about impressing people. It's about how do you help people? How do you do it right? How do you make yourself happy? Yeah. I wouldn't mind being a mechanic, auto mechanic. That would be my, you know, surgical career, repairing cars and doing wonderful things for people so they could get around again and help them. There are so many ways to help people. Right now I'm looking for them because at 91, I loved, you know, as a surgeon, that didn't limit it to people. I pruned trees, bushes, you know, landscaped. That was surgery for me, too. And now I'm just getting old and tired, and I don't do those things. And I have gotten high school students to help me, but I wanted one to come over yesterday, and then I got so tired, I told him not to come because I couldn't be out there with him, directing him to do the things I wanted done physically. He's a nice kid. I'll get him back. But that way he can walk places, lift branches, do things, and then I feel good looking at everything, and it's prettier. So there are many ways for you to be yourself. And just remember that. And if you need a hug, oh boy, that's another thing. Ask for a hug. I found at the hospital a lot of times I was saying, I need to hug you. And then one day I thought to myself, why don't you say to the person, you need a hug now? You know, after they had bad news and other things. But I always said, I need to hug you. And I realized, yeah, it's because you need the hug. And so there, and I mean this, many of the patients handled their problems better than I did, and they would hug me to help me get through their troubles. Because it was like they were my family. And it wasn't hard for me to help them in the sense of cutting into them. I mean, I didn't see the incision as an assault or an attack or something. It was a repair. You know, it's like you take your car somewhere and they redo parts. And I would redo things too. And I would do more things in the operating room to help them not have pain. You know, see the operation as a healing process, as a change. So yes, I got them to draw pictures. And if the operating room looked like hell, I'd say, no, this isn't right for you. We have to change your mind or change your treatment. And the same thing with the pill, you know, what it looked like. Because healing is many things. I always mention, so many of you may have heard me tell the story about Amber, a little 8-year-old, who was in the hospital and quite ill. And she drew a picture with a purple cloud over her bed. And I knew that was saying, purple spiritual color, I'm going to die and go to heaven. And I told her mother, who was doing everything she could to cure Amber's cancer. When I say that, I mean she literally took her around the world trying to find a treatment that would cure her. And I said, it's time to stop. Amber is accepting this. It's time to stop dragging her anywhere. Take her home and love her. That's what she needs now. Not another trip to a foreign country. And her mother took her home with the drawing. In the drawing, there were 8 figures of something like on a table, standing up, like you could say 8 candles. And I told her mother I didn't know what that meant, the 8 meant, but it meant something about her life. 8 days later, I got the phone call. Bernie, yes. Amber woke up this morning and said, Mom, I'm dying today as a gift to you because today is your birthday. So I'm dying as a gift to free you from all this trouble. And what a difference that made to our mother to be able to accept that. And I still have that drawing to look at every day because her mother gave it to me as a gift because of how much it helped her put up with the death of her child. So believe me, we have a lot of power over a lot of things. And don't feel that you've lost your power because I'm older and tired and yeah, I'm still just trying to decide, what do I do now? Keep going, new things, leave my body and take a rest. I haven't made up my mind yet because I get too involved with people, so it's hard to say, oh, I think I'll die next Sunday and stop all this craziness. Because for me, I don't do craziness. It's not my definition of my life. I may be crazy, but I enjoy what I'm doing, and I enjoy people and relationships and pets and just, you know, to have my two cats jump into bed at night with me and call. That's such a gift. It's hard to say, I think I'll die. Yeah, but then I don't get this tomorrow. So pick out what makes you happy. Okay? There's your assignment from this program. Do what makes you happy. So list those things and then get them into your life in the next month before I come back again. All right. Love you all.